Hello and welcome to another episode of Menopause Cafe and Conversation with series of podcasts. And today I'm delighted to have Catherine Hale with me. And Catherine is a coach, educator and guide who describes herself as a heartfelt entrepreneur who is passionate about shifting the experience of menopause into one that's culturally held, knowing that we need to address this shift from both a personal and systemic perspective. Catherine has a lifelong passion for the natural world, and she lives in deepest Devon by the River Dart with her cat Simba. Welcome, Catherine.
Thank you, Helen. Thank you. Thanks for welcoming me here.
How are you? How are things in down in deepest Devon?
Oh, it's raining. No, the sun's come out momentarily, but May has been uncharacteristically wet. So I'm not getting to enjoy the big outdoors as much as I like to.
I mean, from your bio, there's just so many strands I'd like to explore. Mm. I mean, firstly, should we start with, I mean, where are you in your menopause journey?
Yeah, so in March, I passed through what I would call the 13 moons, which is the more shamanic tradition of marking the moment of menopause. So in Western medical science, they say it's like 12 months, but we think more shamanically, then it's the 13 moons that we move through until we reach the next year. So that happened at the end of March. And I did a ceremony to mark that transition with a friend who runs ceremonies, although this is the first time that she's run a menopause ceremony. It was a test run. So she's not at the same point on her journey as I am. So when it's her turn, we will support her. But essentially, it was just four of us who gathered to mark the transition and to honour the transition. And that felt particularly important for me because I didn't experience that at the beginning of my bleed. So during menarche, that was just like, that got missed, as it did for so many women. So it felt really really important to mark it in some personally significant way.
Mm. Because there are cultures, aren't there, that actually celebrate the girl's first period. It is a moment of celebration.
Yeah. And it's understood that, you know, this is a transition. We transition at that point, we transition into the bleeding years and we transition out of them. And those points are not held just by women, but they're held by the wider culture, the wider society.
Hmm. I mean, if you're talking about the moons and the cycles, I mean, we've spoken previously about looking at the linearity and the cyclical nature of our bodies and how we misfit or fit within the system. Hmm. Would you like to speak a little more to that?
Yeah, so, you know, women have a cyclic by nature. And yet the world we live in is a linear world. It's all about moving forwards and growth and expansion. And if we were to kind of plot that on a graph, it would be like an exponential line moving upwards, forever moving upwards. And yet the female body and the world we live in is cyclic. We have seasons. And the female body has its own internal seasons. So as we arrive at the threshold of menstruation, you know, we move through four seasons each month, each menstrual month, spring, summer, autumn and winter. And each one of those has a particular flavour to it. So we can look at it kind of archetypally. So the season of spring, we are calling in the energies of the maiden. So that's a time where on a behavioural level, we'll probably feel like we've got some new ideas, we've got some seeds, they want to be planted, but we're not quite ready to kind of bring them out into the world in their full bloom yet. But then as we enter that summer phase, which the peak of which is ovulation, then our energy is increasingly more outward. Archetypally, that's the energy of the mother. So we're there, we've got full of estrogen, it's about giving to everybody else, we can do everything, we're superwoman, right? But the minute that that peak of estrogen drops off, we descend into autumn. And so the archetype associated with that phase is, there's a couple. So one is like the priestess, one is the warrioress. And, you know, as many of us know, that's the time, if we get it, when PMT is going to occur in our cycle. So it's a time of shedding, like the leaves, letting go. Mm. And then there's the descent down into winter. And the energy, or the archetypal energy of winter, is the crone. It's going in, stopping, sleeping, resting. It's darkness, quiet, stillness. So, you know, if as women we understand that essentially we go through this cycle every month, and that we are four women every month, then trying to live that way in a linear world is challenging for us.
And I mean, what happens then if, for example, if you're taking birth control, where perhaps you skip a bleed?
Yeah. So, you know, with birth control, there's kind of like it's like a blanket that sits over it all. Because the bleed we get during when we take birth control isn't a normal bleed. So those kind of fluctuations that happen naturally are kind of, I mean, I kind of think about it as like a cloudy blanket that kind of obscures it, and we don't really get the nuances of each of those discrete phases.
We muffle it, I suppose.
Yeah.
So how do you feel now you are postmenopausal? Do you feel, as your core self, do you feel different as a woman, as a human, as you know, is your core essence the same, or has that changed?
I mean, it's been a huge initiation for me, and I don't feel like I'm out the other side of it. So to be described as postmenopausal, it's like, I don't feel like I'm there. I'm still in the washing machine. So I think that's maybe the first time someone's described me as postmenopausal. But essentially, I think fundamentally, the person that I was has died. It's fallen away. And what's been born in its place is someone who's kind of less concerned about what others think, right? For me, it's been, although it's been very challenging at times, it's been a journey of empowerment. I remember reading about estrogen being described as the veil of accommodation. And what I noticed is, as my estrogen levels fell away, and I think they fell away quite abruptly, I just had no capacity in me anymore to put up with things that I'd previously endured. And, you know, and for me, this is where kind of menopause meets the other body of work, which I do, which is around trauma resolution. Because, you know, as women, we have a greater tendency to have dysregulation in our social nervous system. And how that plays out is we tend to people please, we tend to fawn, we tend to appease, which is symptomatic of like a freeze response in the social nervous system, or hypersocialization in the social nervous system. And what I noticed during menopause is all of those patterns came up really clearly for me to see. So I'm doing this behavior because I want to fit in, because I want to feel safe. I'm doing this behavior because I want to be liked. I'm doing this behavior because I want to avoid conflict. I'm doing this, you know, so I was able to kind of examine that area of my life and just get clear on what wasn't serving me. It required me doing the deep trauma resolution work. But to allow this kind of stronger, more powerful woman to emerge, who can stand her ground, who can speak her truth, who is here with much more authenticity.
Do you have any specific anchors, if you like, back to ventral? what are your tips? Do you use a smell? Do you use, I don't know, breathing technique when you want to bring yourself back into that embodied state?
Yeah. So it depends where I've gone in my nervous system. So if we think about the nervous system for sake of like ease of this conversation, that we can dysregulate into fight flight responses. Those are hyper responses. Or we can dysregulate into hypo responses, which are the cascade of freeze responses. And depending on where someone is, you will have a different way of engaging with that and bringing yourself back to regulation. So if someone's in a freeze response, often it can actually be quite hard to notice when we've gone there. You know, as I said before, as women, we can have a tendency to be in a low level freeze so that we're safe, essentially. So beginning to notice when we are a little bit offline, when we're a little bit cloudy, when we're a little bit fuzzy, when we feel a little bit disconnected, maybe we feel a bit overwhelmed. A key physiological characteristic to look for is changes in body temperature. So when we go into a freeze response, the blood flow stops going to the extremities. So we check for toes and fingers. So when we go into freeze, there's often like a coldness in the extremities. So we just begin to start noticing body sensations. We start to track body sensations. We start to notice emotions and to track emotions. And we use that data to tell us where we are on a map of the nervous system at any one time. So if I was working with somebody who was in a freeze response, I would name that I sense that they're in a freeze response. And freeze needs lots of time. It needs a lot of patience. It needs a lot of compassion to come back into aliveness. It needs a high level of safety to be able to come back into aliveness. So one strategy that I use is inviting in this sense of resource, which can be as simple as an object or something in the room, which when you look at it, you can notice how it makes you feel. So for example, I've got a picture of an owl on the wall here. And, you know, when I look at the owl and then kind of bring my attention to my body, there's like, okay, there's a softness, there's like a slowing down that happens. And so if I was in freeze right now, I would invite that softness and that slowing down to be in relationship with the freeze response. So that we have a level of presence to what is actually happening. And then often what happens as we bring that presence, by bringing that softness of the owl to the freeze response, it begins to start pouring out. And if somebody was in a fight response, then I would be inviting in the possibility of feeling that energy fully. So what that might look like is pushing arms against a wall and actually feeling the strength of the body and claiming back that power. If someone's more in a flight response, which would be kind of the anxiety type feelings, then their body would be going, there'd be a speed that would be detected in the body. And there's likely a movement that wants to kind of move up and out. So again, I'd invite in presence. And can you track that? Can you track that movement that wants to move out of your body? And is there a animal instinct or momentum that your body wants to follow? So often with flight, there can be this like twist in the body that wants to happen to get away. So we like allow that movement to happen, which orients the organs in a different direction. And we just see what happens then. And there's usually a discharge of this energy that moves out of the body.
I mean, that is fascinating, because if you then link that in with the body changes that go on with, you know, the vasomotor symptoms, it's almost as if it would be really interesting to track somebody's autonomic nervous system when they're having hot flushes and night sweats. I don't actually know whether anybody's done that, because that would be really quite fascinating.
I've tracked it slightly on myself. And whenever I had a hot flush, it would trigger a fight response in me. But then I got to this point and was like, is it the fight response that's activating the hot flush? Or is it the hot flush that's activating the fight response? Or is the chicken and the egg? Which one's coming first? I was also told once that the hot flushes happen because you wake up, not the other way around. So, yes, I think it would be really fascinating for more scientific studies to be done on that topic.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what do you think it is about midlife that so many of us falter and trip up a bit, particularly women? I mean, obviously with stress and, you know, what you've spoken about before, with living up, you know, this mismatch between sort of a cyclical versus a linear life. I mean, are we almost predestined by the way we live our lives to have these issues around about midlife?
Mm-hmm. Well, the way I see it is that women's bodies are hormonally more sensitive than male bodies, because we go through this monthly variation in our hormone levels. And I'm particularly interested in what happens when the hormonal system and the nervous system meet, right, that intersection. And so if we look at the hormonal system is meant to be like self-regulatory. So you have progesterone, which is one of the hormones in the female body. And progesterone is really clever because it can be converted into other hormones where needed. So the relationship between estrogen and progesterone is balanced by progesterone. However, progesterone can also be turned into cortisol, which is a stress hormone. So if we're living stressful lives, which I would say the majority of women do, because we're working, we've got a family, we've got, you know, children to look after, we're multitasking, we're doing so much, then that balance between progesterone and estrogen is going to be imbalanced in a lot of women already, right? Probably from the 20s onwards. So by the time we arrive at the threshold of perimenopause, we've got a hormonal system that's compromised and has been historically compromised. And just to add another piece into that is that the adrenal glands, which are essentially our body's bank of energy, they get compromised when we're stressed. And what happens as we go through perimenopause and menopause is the job that the ovaries had, which is creating estrogen and progesterone, gets transferred to the adrenal glands. So your adrenal glands are probably really tired already, and then they've got this extra job. So we've got this hormonal system that has struggled and tried to keep going and keep going and keep going and keep going. And we reach these like bigger hormonal shifts of perimenopause and it just can't handle it, right? And what's interesting here is that the hormonal system is in a bi-directional relationship with the nervous system. So when the hormonal system is releasing more cortisol, it's sending a message to the nervous system that it's stress, and the nervous system will respond to that, go into fight, flight, or freeze response. And then that will in turn feed back to the hormonal system. So you end up with these two systems that are dysregulated, colliding with each other in this time that we call perimenopause, menopause. Mm. So I think the symptoms that we experience at this time are not necessarily indicative of, or are not necessarily caused by menopause, they're actually caused by living in such a dysregulated society. And if we consider that women's bodies are a barometer of the health of our society, then we're not doing pretty well, are we?
No.
We're like the litmus test.
I was going to say, I mean, and it's also, awareness is the first thing, isn't it, to realise what's going on, and also to get ourselves out and off the hamster wheel. Is that something that sort of resonates with you? Have you had to sort of perhaps recalibrate and completely revisit how you live your life?
Yeah. I mean, you know, we live in a culture that prizes us for our productivity. The more productive we are, the more we get rewarded for that. And on the external, but also internally, you know, women are rewarded for their estrogen. Women are rewarded for their mothering, for their outward behavior. But we're not rewarded for our inward reflective, you know, deeper or the darker side of the feminine, as it's known as. So, you know, we're up against it really in female bodies because hormonally we're rewarded, and culturally we're rewarded for this behavior that's very productive. Mm-hmm. So, you know, yes, I mean, I was a teacher for many years working in inner city London schools, and I reached a point around about 38, 39 where I couldn't do that anymore. It just wasn't doable. And I retrained and became in many different modalities, actually, until I've turned into who I am today. But I've had to really understand that what I'm working against is systemic trauma, the systemic trauma of the world that we live in, which is push beyond, strive. You know, I recently got an invitation to do a podcast on another coach's platform. And I took one look at their platform and I was just like, just no way. Because it was all about earn this figure every month and, you know, six figures this and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, this, I'm so against this.
We were never designed to live like this, were we?
No. No. And you know, so many of the clients that I work with who are, this particular group I'm thinking of are women in their 30s who have chronic illness because of the way in which the world operates. You know, they have chronic fatigue because they've just been taught to just override themselves. Oh, you're bleeding, you know, it's your monthly bleed. Oh, get to work, carry on, business as usual. Rather than you need to stop, you need to pause, you need to rest, you need to recuperate. You're actually losing life force energy and you need to put in really high quality nutrients back into your body so that blood can be replenished.
I mean, how, there is no, I don't think there's an easy answer, but how do we shift the systemic perspective? How do we move from where we are? Because I think that the current beliefs are so deeply embedded, and I sense, I mean, from some of my conversations, I sense there is movement. I think there is unrest that can potentially move in a positive direction. Mm. Women are predominantly saying, no, I can't live like this anymore. B, I don't want to. Mm. And trying to find a more authentic, fulfilling purpose.
Yeah. I mean, it's a really big question what you're asking there. But if we look at the current situation, we're essentially the hamster in the wheel who is spinning so fast we're out of control and we're hurtling towards our own destruction, right? And it's time we all put the brakes on and started to look at the values which we hold. So if we look at our relationship to money, often it's a really unhealthy one. And if we look at like the standard of lifestyle that we have in the Western world. You know, we've got so used to a high level of comfort. And, you know, can we begin to backtrack from that? Can we begin to pull away from that? And really what I see here is, you know, there's the individual personal trauma piece. You know, someone's like, I don't feel worthy. I don't feel worthy. I don't feel good. So the way I'm going to make myself feel good is to create status and success in the outside world. And I'm going to earn a certain amount of money. And with that money, I mean, I think money is wonderful, right? But it's how it's used. With that money, I'm going to spend it on fast cars and luxury items and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, because I still don't feel good in myself. So it's really down to, you know, on an individual level, are we willing to do the inner work to transform these very kind of adolescent and juvenile patterns that are dictating our lives? And, you know, I see a lot of people stepping up and doing that work. You know, the communities that I move in, you know, everyone is looking. And yet there is this kind of the wider population who are kind of just stuck in this model of consumption. More, bigger, faster. That are driving this kind of this trajectory into oblivion. So how do we wake up the masses? How do we facilitate change across the board, not just in those who have been doing work for some time, right? And, you know, like the period movement, right? Menstruation movement.
Yeah.
I mean, that's been really significant.
Absolutely. You know,
there are a lot of local women who have been quite pivotal in bringing that message forward, and how in the workplace there are now, like, menstrual policies in place, and there's an understanding, and that ripples out and change is beginning to happen, just as there are now, like, menopausal policies beginning to appear in the workplace. You know, these conversations are beginning to happen. The significance of these events that happen in a female body are being shouted about from the rooftops. You know, and I'll go back to a phrase that's been said many, many, many times, which is, you know, the change that we need right now is going to be driven by the Western woman.
Yep.
Right? We're educated enough. We can see what's happening.
Yep.
We've experienced what it's like to live in these systems that just don't work. And there's enough of us who are saying, like, enough of this. Like, we need something different. We are not going to stand by anymore. And to me, that's the voice of menopause.
Totally. Totally. I mean, going back to last week with Davina McCall's Channel 4 documentary, I mean, can you imagine that having been made even perhaps 4 or 5 years ago? Mm. I think that would have been absolutely groundbreaking. Yeah.
Taboo topic.
Yeah.
Yes, and so these conversations are happening. There is an understanding, a bigger understanding in our communities that this event actually happens for women, and the level of significance and impact this event has on us. I mean, when I watched that program with Davina, I think the statistic she shared was 9 out of 10 women said that menopause had negatively impacted their work.
And what about their lives as opposed to their work?
Yeah. Yeah.
Nine out of 10. I mean, that's pretty significant.
Yeah, 90%. 90% of women. And, you know, it's been a topic that's been so shrouded in shame and misunderstanding. I was speaking with a friend recently who went through early menopause in her late 30s, and she didn't tell anyone. There was so much shame around it. You know, her fear of what that actually meant. I'm getting old. I'm going to be considered to be useless, not worthy anymore, not worth anything anymore. And so she didn't communicate it to any of her friends. And, you know, I remember watching Davina saying something that she was sharing how she had gone on to HRT and hadn't told anyone because of the shame of that, right? So this whole kind of woman's bodies, the processes that happen in female bodies, have always been shrouded with so much shame and misunderstanding.
I mean, it's partly, without sort of wanting to go down the whole patriarchal thing, I mean, it's partly, I think, an element of oppression, isn't it? But, I mean, with the HRT, I found that actually quite amazing that, you know, to hear Davina say that she hadn't told anyone because she didn't like to say. I mean, that's yeah. I mean, are you happy telling anyone that you do or do not?
Yeah, I mean, well, my whole journey with I've been on HRT now for probably about 5 weeks, and I so wish I had started so much earlier. I've been about 6 years in the transition, and I had a lot of fear around HRT. I believed that the cancer that my mum had was HRT related. I'll admit it, I had judgment around people taking HRT. You know, I thought it was like, oh, it's just a cop out. You just can't face the initiation. You're not strong enough. I wrote a post about this recently on Facebook, kind of confessing my experience with going on to HRT. And I realized that there were certain people that I found it very difficult to tell them that I'd gone on HRT. And when I inquired more deeply into that, I was fearful of losing my belonging. I was fearful of being judged in the friendships that really mattered to me, because, you know, my community are alternative practitioners. And I've been very identified with this healer identity for a long time. And going on HRT made me feel like a failure, right? I'd had to succumb to the giants of Big Pharma, you know, and I'd somehow failed myself. And what I then came to realize was true was that I was actually choosing my own suffering, right? I was choosing my own suffering because I wanted to be right. I was choosing my own suffering because I wanted to belong. I was choosing my own suffering because probably somewhere deep down, I didn't really feel that I deserved to be well and healthy at this time. So, you know, menopause has been a great awakener and a shifter of my beliefs and my identities. And again, you know, that's a big trauma piece of work there that I've had to kind of go through and really discover what is true for me and meet those younger parts that were really in quite a strong trauma response. And clear that from my system. So now I take HRT from a place of choice. And, you know, like I said, I'm only 5 weeks into the journey. The hot flushes have nearly all gone, although I do sometimes still get a couple at night. But compared to what it was, I mean, it was horrific. It was truly horrific. And what I'm living with now is the consequences of 3 years of hot flushes and the massive sleep deprivation that was caused during that time. And now my adrenals are really tired and worn out because, you know, I've just had to keep on going, had to just keep kind of, you know, working and living life and also pushing through when I should have paused.
I was going to say pushing through, yeah, that those were the sentiments I was going to come up with, yeah. Mm. I mean, out of interest, when you picked up your HRT, was there any hesitation between, I asked because I mean, when I first had my patches, I remember sitting looking at them and for a week or so, I was just, no, I just couldn't even put one on. It was a huge step.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I had appointments with a private menopause doctor that I cancelled a couple of times. So I'm like, oh, it's okay, but it's all stopped now. The symptoms are stopped. I don't need support. And then, of course, they'd come back again. And then eventually I spoke to a doctor and I got my HRT and I put it on my bedside cabinet. And it was probably there for about 4 weeks. And I just looked at it and I thought, well, maybe I can just take it homeopathically. Maybe it just being there is enough, right? I was so resistant to taking it. I was, it felt like I was moving to the dark side, you know? I had such a judgment. But once I started taking it and experiencing symptom relief, not just from the hot flushes, but, you know, vaginal dryness that shifted, like there's like this sex drive that's kind of like reignited. It's like, oh, hello, you've been gone for a while. and my sleep is kind of slowly kind of like transitioning back to a more regulated pattern.
Wow.
I mean, I guess part of my fear of taking HRT was that I would miss the initiation. And okay, I'm only 5 weeks into it, but what I'm reminded of here is something which is taught in somatic experiencing, which is a trauma resolution training, which is this idea that, you know, we can split things into red, which is like the bad, challenging stuff, or blue, which is the good and pleasurable things that happen in life. And I was trying to meet the initiation of menopause whilst kind of swimming in a sea of red because I was so tired. Now that I feel more resourced and I'm more on the blue side of things, I can still meeting the initiation, but it's just so much easier, right? And this is how we work with trauma, is we don't just dive into the deep end and meet the really most difficult stuff. No, we start off where there's health and wellness, right? We grow that, and then we move into the place where there's challenge and difficulty to then move back into the place where there's wellness again, right? So, you know, I think menopause can be that kind of battering of being in the washing machine of red relentlessly. And actually, you know, are we healing? Are things changing? Or are we just literally running into a brick wall again and again and again? And I will honestly say that for part of my journey, I've been running into a brick wall. So now I've got some relief. There's greater capacity to go deeper into the initiatory process.
The win-win, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just to wrap things up before we finally finish, would you like to tell us your five top tips, if you have five indeed? You may have more, but what are your five top tips for menopause? What helps and what works for you?
Okay, so the first one is time. Create time, create space. Plan ahead and reduce your commitments. The second one is support. We all need support at this time, whether that's body work, friendship, specific menopause support groups, whether it's herbal supplements, going to see your GP. We need support. We need to learn how to receive support at this time. The third one is trauma resolution. Like, this is a golden opportunity to do the deep trauma resolution work, right? As our nervous system is jangled and our hormonal system are jangled, it's like everything comes up at this time. So use that opportunity and do the healing work. The fourth is to talk about it, bring it out of the shadows, destigmatize it, remove the shame, and normalize these conversations. And then the fifth is like empowerment. It's like seize the power that's available to you at this time. So, you know, many of us think that, you know, oh, menopause is this really horrific, scary, awful time. And there are challenges, but the possibility of stepping into greater power and authenticity is available to us at this time. So we get to be reborn. We get to come into our second spring, to be born again into a new version of ourselves. And what a wonderful opportunity that we have presented through the menopause to do that.
Amazing. Amazing. What an absolutely brilliant positive note to end on. Mm-hmm. Catherine, it's been absolutely fascinating. Thank you so much for spending your afternoon talking with me. And I'll put all of your contact details and where people can find you in the program notes. But Catherine, just thank you ever so much.
Well, thank you so much, Helen. And it's just a joy to be able to have these conversations and to offer some pearls of wisdom and guidance and support to anyone who may be listening to this.
Thank you.
Just to let women know we're all in this together, right? No more doing this on our own anymore.
Absolutely not. Thanks, Catherine.
Thank you.